Gary's lesson for us this morning. I just wanted to remind you all, as was mentioned last evening, is there is, for those of you with children, if there is a need, there is a classroom upstairs. Katrina is up there with her kids right now, and it is this presentation is being live streamed up to the TV that's in that room. So feel free to, if you need to, go up there and make that available to you. So it'll be maybe a help to you if you need it. Really enjoyed and was, I found that lesson compelling and convicting, didn't you? Thank you, Sid. Gary, the podium is yours.
So I'm supposed to start out by introducing myself. I don't usually do that, but I'm Gary Fisher. And I work with the church in Bargersville, Indiana, about 45 minutes from here. It's just south of Indianapolis. And we don't ever count, but I think we have about 150 on Sunday morning, something like that. I've worshipped there since the end of 2011, and I've been an elder there. We appointed elders in 2018. There were four of us. One resigned because of health considerations a few years ago, so they're now three. One of them is Ryan and Christy's brother. They know him, Jason, and Chris Gregory is the other one. My wife, Sandra, is here, thankfully. She's the best part of our family, and I have two children. They both lived in states far apart from us, but in the summer of 2018, both of them independently decided to move toward us, so they live right close to us. I think they were looking for some free babysitting, which they've gotten. But my son and his family are planning to move to Africa about the first of the year, so that'll be a little farther away. And I've been a preacher since 1980, so that's what I do and what I've done. I haven't retired and hopefully won't have to for a long time. So what I'd like to do is use the scriptures and also some of my background. As an adult, I've been a part of four churches with elders, including the one at Bargersville. And I want to draw some on that experience as we talk about. I just want to make three simple points, and that's all I've got to say. So the first one, these are obvious, but I think we need to think about them. Elders are chosen from the church. And we don't have a lot in the New Testament about the process of the choice of elders. We have the qualifications, and I think we have an indication that Titus was certainly expected to appoint elders in the church in Crete. And I suspect this is the qualifications there for Timothy to be doing the same thing, maybe appointing more elders in Ephesus or whatever. We have statements like in Acts 14 that on Paul's first journey, when he went back through those towns, they appointed elders in every church. But we don't have a lot about process. We don't know exactly what steps they took in doing that. But I would suggest Acts 6 is a helpful thought about how to select men for special functions in the church. Not that these are elders, but I think it's a kind of a parallel kind of thing. In Acts chapter 6, you know the problem. They had those widows that were being served food, the Christian widows, and there were some who were native to that area, and there were others that were Greek-speaking Jews from other places. And the Greek-speaking Jews thought their widows were not getting their fair amount of food. They weren't being treated as equitably. And that created a problem. And they brought it to the apostles, but there were only 12 apostles, and there was a big congregation. And it emphasized in Acts 6 that the number of the disciples was increasing. They said they just didn't have time to oversee that. And so they asked them to select, Acts 6:3, select from among you seven men. So they were supposed to be selecting from their own number. They were not hiring outside consultants or something like that, but selecting from themselves seven men. And he gives the criteria for those men. He says, select from among you seven men of good reputation, full of the Spirit and of wisdom, whom we may put in charge of this task. Those qualifications seem very relevant to the work that they're going to be doing. They're going to be overseeing this food distribution to the widows, trying to make sure that it's fair. So he says they need to be men of good reputation. If they were not respected men, then they probably wouldn't be able to resolve the conflict. People wouldn't trust them. They wouldn't think they were doing it right. So they need to be men of good reputation. That really relates to what they're doing. They need to be men who are full of the Spirit. Before any consideration of competence, the men who were doing this needed to be Spirit-filled men, spiritually minded people, men of God. You know, sometimes we're more looking for people who've got certain talents, certain great abilities. But overshadowing that is spiritual considerations for any service that we do in the Lord. And then they needed to be full of wisdom. So they needed to have the wisdom to be able to get this job done. And as was mentioned last night, there's so many things that have been said already that are equal to what I'm saying, or at least dovetail with it. And in talking about the characteristics of elders, you know, God didn't set down an arbitrary list of qualifications and just say, these are the ones I picked out of the hat, make them be like this. We're saying that shepherds need these qualities to be able to do their work. And these men needed these qualities to be able to do their work. This was not arbitrary. It's if they don't have these qualities, they're not going to do a good job of overseeing the work of the distribution of food. Now, I want you to think about something. They picked seven men. In fact, that's verse 5. The statement found approval with the whole congregation, and they chose Stephen, a man full of faith and of the Holy Spirit, and Philip, Prochorus, Nicanor, Timon, Parmenas, and Nicholas, a proselyte from Antioch. Those are the seven. What about number 8? You know, there had to be a guy who would have been the next one up if one of those seven had not been available. And he wasn't chosen. Probably there was an 8th who had pretty much the same qualifications, who was probably a spiritually minded person full of wisdom and of good reputation. Maybe he wasn't as well known. Maybe he had less impact. Maybe just the supporters of the other seven talk louder. I don't know. But there was number 8 that didn't get chosen. You know, what was his attitude? You know, I think sometimes we almost feel a competitive sense when it comes to appointing elders. And somebody is not going to get chosen that some other group in the same situation might have chosen. Maybe even a better choice than, maybe I think I'm a better choice than what somebody else would be. And so I think we've got to think about the 8th man and resolve that if that's me, I'll do everything I can to support those 7 in the work they're doing. This is the work of the Lord. It's too great to let jealousy or competitiveness or anything like that interfere with. But my point in this at all is that elders are chosen from the church. And I think that says if they're selected from the flock, they're going to reflect the nature of the flock. You wonder, how could we get better elders in churches? Well, have a better pool of people to choose from. You know, if we're stronger, the elders chosen from among us will be stronger. If we're weaker, the elders chosen from among us will be weaker. Think about Israel and the kings they had. Most of them reflected the nature of the people in the group. Now, I'm not saying that the leaders don't impact the group as well. But really, don't expect your elders to be better than what you are. You know, if we want to have better elders, let's have better churches. Let's have people who are stronger and more dedicated to the Lord, and then the qualities of the elders will improve. So elders are chosen from the church. My second point is that elders are not the church. They're part of the church. It's interesting to me that elders are almost never highlighted in the introduction to the letters to the churches. He doesn't write to the elders at this church and to the elders at that church. One time in Philippians 1, he writes to the church with the elders and deacons. He does mention them specifically. That's the only church that he does that with. It's not like when he writes to a church, he's thinking, I'm writing mostly to the elders. There's at least once in 1 Peter 5, one of those letters actually has some specific instructions for the elders. Peter was an elder, and he writes to the fellow elders there for about 4 verses of chapter 5. But in general, the letters to the churches are written to the churches, not to the elders of the churches per se. And I think it's an important thing to think about I think we tend to think of churches almost as the elders, or the elders are the church. That's not true. The elders are a part. They're doing a job, but they're not the church. I was in a church for 5 years with very good elders, and that's one of the points they made over and over again. We are not the church. The church is all of us. We work together. We're not the church. We're just two men. And I think that's so helpful. Much of the work of elders is not exclusive work. Sid essentially said that a minute ago. Look at 1 Peter 5 for a second. 1 Peter 5 and verse 2. Shepherd the flock of God. This is spoken to the elders as your fellow elder, verse 1. Verse 2, he tells them, shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily. You may have another translation of that. But that verb, to exercise oversight, is to basically to watch over, to watch out for, to oversee is the idea. You're looking over them, you're watching out for them, and so forth. You might keep your finger there if you want and turn to Hebrews 12. Hebrews 12, verse 15. See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, and that no root of bitterness spring up and causing trouble, and by it many be defiled, that there be no immoral or godless person like Esau, who sold his own birthright for a single meal, and so forth. That verb to see to it is the same idea. It's the same root as the verb in 1 Peter 5. Exercising the oversight is what he's saying to the church. You oversee, you watch out, you see to it that no bitter person arises, that see to it that the group has the right attitude and the right spirit. So that's saying that the elders' work of overseeing is not an exclusive work to the elders. It is a work they have a special responsibility in, but in this passage, the whole church is exhorted to be seeing to it, to be overseeing, to be helping each other out. And I think that's such an important thing. Now, I understand that the elders are the ones that will give specifically an account for their shepherding. But elders are not the exclusive shepherds of the church. There's so much that needs to be done by all of us working together. Shepherds take the lead in those things, but it's not the shepherd's church. They are not the church. Think about the role of those special servants in Acts 6. Was it just on the seven, or were they supposed to cook the food and distribute the food and oversee the thing and all that? No. Everybody needed to pitch in, or many people needed to pitch in that work. And if there were some individuals who weren't one of the seven, but they saw a widow being neglected, they needed to help her, or they needed to bring it before them to help, or whatever they needed to do. This was a collaborative project. Let me give you an example. I think it was a year ago last summer that we were having our fourth Sunday singing. And one of the brothers was up leading a song when all of a sudden all the cell phones went ballistic with a tornado warning. Well, yeah, that's the first time that had happened in a church building I'd been in. And I kind of thought maybe the song leader would stop, but he didn't. And I wasn't sure what needed to be done. And I was sitting up near the front. I think the other elders probably somewhere behind me. I don't know. I just didn't know quite what to do. So the song leader, when he got done with that song, he said, why don't you all silence those phones and we'll go on to the next song. I thought, I wasn't sure what to do. One of the deacons and one of the ones that's in charge of the worship service, is kind of one of his roles, he had gone outside when he got the notice, looked over the clouds, saw where the tornado was. It was a couple miles from us. And he came very calmly in, went up to the song leader, stopped him in the song, and said, here's what we need to do. There's a tornado outside, and here's what we need to be doing, and where we need to go, and so forth. Exactly what he needed to do. He didn't check with any of us elders before he did that. He didn't need to. That was the thing to do. He took the responsibility. He had more sense than we did at that point, and recognized that it was his responsibility, and he just did it. Thank God. We appreciated that. That was the right thing to do. Thankfully, the tornado was not very strong, and it didn't actually come into the building, but it was close. But that's what needs to be done. He wasn't trying to lord it over anybody. He wasn't trying to take any authority that didn't belong to him. He saw a need and he fulfilled it. And don't think that elders are always going to know the right thing to do, or always going to jump when they should jump, or even when spiritual things are being dealt with. It takes the congregation as a whole to make the kind of body that Sid was talking about in Ephesians chapter 4. With every joint supplying. I appreciate what he said about those things. I think that's exactly what we ought to think. So elders are not the church. The elders' work is not exclusive work that only elders can do for the most part. It's work that we all need to be involved in. We love each other. We try to grow spiritually so we can strengthen and help each other in the work of the Lord. My third and last point, I want to talk some about the relationship of the church to elders. Go with me to 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy chapter 5. Paul tells Timothy, we'll be back in 1 Timothy 5 a little later too, but look at verses 1 and 2. Do not sharply rebuke an older man, but rather appeal to him as a father, to the younger men as brothers, the older women as mothers, and the younger women as sisters in all purity. So when you talk to an older man, this would not just be elders, I think. I think he's talking about even ones who are chronologically older that may not be appointed as specific elders. But we need to have humility and gentleness and respect when we talk to those older men. He says, don't sharply rebuke an older man. Older men could need rebuke. That's certainly true. Jesus was opposed by the elders who followed the traditions of the elders. So older men are not always right. But if we're younger, trying to work with someone who's older, we need to do that in a humble, gentle, respectful way. There's a right way and a wrong way to help elders to get better, even just older men in a congregation, but certainly that would apply to how we deal with those who are elders. In 1 Peter chapter 5, after he's been talking about elders for the first four verses in 1 Peter 5 and verse 5, you younger men likewise be subject to your elders, and all of you clothe yourself with humility toward one another, for God is opposed to the proud but gives grace to the humble. Again, the concept of the humility that needs to be a part of our relationship with elders, whether we're talking about elders, appointed elders, or whether we're talking about older men in a congregation, they need to be treated with respect and dignity and humility on our part. Humility is a hard thing to want to have, and it's a hard thing to obtain. So we need to really think about that when it comes to how we deal with elders in a congregation. Look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 12. But we request of you, brethren, that you appreciate those who diligently labor among you and have charge over you in the Lord and give you instruction, and that you esteem them very highly in love because of their work. I think he's talking at least about elders, maybe exclusively, although it could be applied to other church workers, I think. But look at what he says. Let's think about this in connection with elders, because it surely includes them. That you appreciate those who diligently labor among you. When elders are working for us, it's a service. It's their work for us. It should not be, and if we've got anything close to qualified elders, it won't be their chance to get their way. This is their opportunity to try to serve us and help us. And we ought to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake. When we see what they've done, when we see how hard they've worked, when we see how much they care, we need to appreciate them. Are elders always going to do the right thing? Are they always going to be smart and wise? Are they always going to be doing and handling things the way I think they should? Well, of course not. But they still need to be appreciated and esteemed very highly because of what they're doing. God didn't make an arrangement where perfect men would be elders, but he made an arrangement where elders would work for us and were appreciative and thankful for what they're doing for us. And notice that part of their work is to give you instruction. Sometimes sheep don't like that. At least human sheep don't. And sometimes they'll be admonishing us. Sometimes they'll be getting after us because they care about us. They're watching out for our souls. And so they will sometimes tell us things we were really hoping not to hear. things we need to hear, things that are important for us, but things that we could develop a bitterness and resentment. Who are you to tell me I'm not doing things right? Who are you to tell me I need to grow more spiritually, or I need to do this, or I need to do that? So having this attitude of appreciation and esteeming them very highly in love may be a challenge if I'm dealing with an elder who's corrected me several times, and I'm not a kind of a person that likes correction. I'm in a texting group with some kids where we text about a chapter of the Bible every day. And we were going through Proverbs, and I just did Proverbs 29:1 this morning. A man who hardens his neck after much reproof will suddenly be broken beyond remedy. It's hard not to harden your neck after a lot of reproof. It's hard to not harden your neck after one word of reproof. But if we harden our neck when we're reproved a lot, which is going to break us. We've got to be humble and tender and moldable. And especially when elders are trying to help us be more like the Lord, we need that. I hate being corrected, but I need it. And I know I do, so I need to have a good attitude toward it and appreciate it and esteem those who correct me. So notice as we continue in verse 13, I'm back in 1 Thessalonians 5, live in peace with one another. Our living in peace with one another is going to make the elders' work a whole lot easier and lighter. And that is a responsibility we have, is to work together peaceably. That's not easy because sometimes you do things I don't like. And sometimes you say things I don't agree with. And to be at peace with people who aren't just like me, and they're not just like what I wanted them to be, takes some work. But that's what Christ does in us. It makes us peacemakers, as Jesus pronounced that blessing in Matthew chapter 5. And then look at verse 14. We urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with everyone. Isn't that interesting? I would expect him to say, we urge you, elders, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with everyone. This is another example of where we have a responsibility to be doing things that we might have thought were exclusive elders' jobs. Are elders supposed to admonish and encourage and help and be patient? Of course. But we are too. And, you know, if we see a brother that needs encouragement or needs consolation or needs an admonishment, an admonition, we need to be involved in that. We need to act and do what we can to support and to help and to build them up. This idea that, we have elders for that. Well, I'm a part of the group too, and this is an every joint supplying sort of a thing. So I think it's interesting in this passage that in verses 12 and 13, I think it's primarily thinking about elders. It's, we urge you, brethren, now in 14, to admonish, encourage, help, and be patient. Another thing I might add to all of this, you realize one of the amazing things. If I'm right that 12 and 13 were elders, you realize how long the church in Thessalonica had been there when Paul wrote 1 Thessalonians? Not very many months. So they pretty quickly found some men to appoint as elders. Obviously, it was an immature congregation, so the most mature men were still probably not mature by the standards of a church that's been around for a few hundred years or something like that, or a few decades. But still, it's amazing that there have been men to appoint as elders and that they are supposed to esteem and respect those men. Then look at 1 Timothy chapter 5. We're still talking about the relationship of the church to elders, which is my last point. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 17, the elders who rule well are to be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who work hard at preaching and teaching. For the scripture says, you shall not muzzle the ox while he is threshing, and the laborer is worthy of his wages. So, elders who rule well. I think it's interesting that he says that. I suppose some elders will rule better than others. You know, we're not all the same skill level. We don't all have the same attitude. Some of them work especially hard at preaching and teaching. That obviously is the primary role of an elder, is to teach. And some of them do that more, better, more. They devote more of their life to that. He said, those who do that are worthy of double honor. 1 Timothy chapter 5 to 6:2 is a chapter and two verses on honor, honoring widows, and honoring elders and honoring masters and so forth. But here the honor, the double honor, I think, is respect and financial support. An honorarium is what you give somebody who preaches a funeral or wedding or something like that. So I think he's saying the elders that rule well and are especially involved in preaching and teaching need to be respected and receive compensation. So he's not saying all of them have to receive that, but he is saying that it could be a full-time job or a part-time job or whatever. Being involved with the flock and helping them and teaching them and so forth could be something where they need to be like the ox that is allowed to eat what he's from his work. And I think that's the illustration that he gives. The laborer is worthy of his hire or of his wages, what Jesus had said. So elders should be respected and in some cases compensated for their work. In verse 19, do not receive an accusation against an elder except on the basis of two or three witnesses. Elders are to be protected from irresponsible accusations. You can imagine that elders have sometimes had to get after, had to rebuke members in the congregation. Sometimes elders have had to rebuke the kids of some of the members in the congregation and things like that. You can imagine that there's some that develop kind of ill will and some kind of a grudge against some of the elders. He says, don't even listen unless there's a witness. No unsupported charges, no vendetta, no gossip should be allowed as evidence for this. You know, unless there's a supported accusation by witnesses, don't listen, Timothy. You know, I suspect most elders who are doing their job has somebody in the congregation who doesn't like them very well. It's hard to exhort and reprove and admonish and have everybody appreciating that. It still needs to be done. We have to be firm in our leadership. But that means the elders need to be protected from people who are just mad about something and to try to come up with some kind of concoct an accusation against them. On the other hand, verse 20, those who continue in sin rebuke in the presence of all so that the rest also will be fearful of sinning. When faced with sinning elders, the church has to have a backbone. And sinning elders are damaging and should be publicly rebuked. You know, a lot of churches, Catholic churches and evangelical churches alike, have covered up a lot of corruption and misbehavior on the part of church leaders. It's terrible. Some of the things that have happened are just atrocious. You know, cases of abuse of all kinds and so forth that several important people in the church know about, and they just make sure nobody finds out about it, nobody else. Instead of making that a public statement, sinning elders are a terrible example. They're terribly demoralizing to the group. And Timothy's told, rebuke them publicly, as Paul withstood Peter to his face in Galatians chapter 2, because he was being a bad influence on the others. That wasn't something you could deal with privately. That needed to be called out in public. So don't receive an unsupported accusation against an elder. But on the other hand, if there are elders that are actually misbehaving, taking advantage of their role perhaps to have power over people and abuse them in some way, that has to be called out publicly. And then, he says in verse 21, I solemnly charge you in the presence of God and of Christ Jesus and of his chosen angels to maintain these principles without bias, doing nothing in a spirit of partiality. I think he's saying don't be partial in appointing elders or in evaluating the accusations against him as well. But I think he goes on to talk about do not lay hands upon anyone too hastily and thereby share responsibility for the sins of others. I think he's saying make sure you know him before you appoint him. Make sure you've got good evidence before you lay your hands on them to appoint them. Verse 24 and 25 explain why. The sins of some men are quite evident going before them to judgment. For others, the sins follow after. Have you noticed that? There are some people, you can tell right off the bat, they're a mess. There are some people who look pretty good for a while, especially if you don't get too involved with them. And they look, they talk good, they're nice, they're always, shaking hands and hugging people and just being encouraging and they show up at the hospital and all that sort of stuff. Some of them do that a whole lot more right before elders are going to be appointed to in some churches. So sometimes it's hard to tell right away that they are a mess. Some people it's obvious, some people it takes a while. Likewise, also, verse 25, deeds that are good are quite evident, and those which are otherwise cannot be concealed. If you're hasty, you may miss the opportunity to point good men who it takes a while for their true character to emerge. Sometimes the best people in the congregation are not the loudest, and so you don't notice them right away. But as you continue to work with them over a period of time, you realize their character and their stability and their blessing and benefit to the group. So that's what I've got to say. We talked about three things. We talked about the fact that elders are chosen from the church, and therefore they're going to be a lot like the nature of the flock. Elders are not the church. We all have responsibilities, and we need to perform them. And the church needs to appreciate and respect the elders and work together well with them. Appreciate your attention. I appreciate what we're getting to do this weekend.